got picked on at school for things he couldn't change. He tried his best to play it cool, but in the seventh grade, you either fit right in or you don't fit. That's just the cold hard truth. I wish that I'd have been the friend that Billy never knew. I think it's time to come together, you and I can make a change. Maybe we can make a difference, make the world a better place. Look around and love somebody we didn't hate.
Welcome back. Top of the second hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast this Friday, November 17th, 2023. I said, well, first announcements. I mentioned the announcements during the first hour. Schedule changes coming in December. Check out the post on that on republicbroadcasting.org, obviously. We're in the second annual John Stabmiller book drive. Make a donation of $100 or more for your chance to win a book. I didn't mention the book in the first hour, though. This week's book, week two book, Lucifer's Children, The Kingdomless Kings of the New World Order, published in 2002 by Milan Martin. Entrants who do not win will be added to subsequent week's drawings. Congratulations to week one book winner, Joyce, Victor Ostrovsky's By Way of Deception, which I think is very, very fitting based on what happened, whatever happened on October 7th and what has happened since then. I said, what was the other thing? Oh, no live broadcasts next week in honor of Thanksgiving. No live broadcast next Thursday and Friday. So Thursday the 23rd, Friday the 24th, November 24th. And maybe the weekend, we'll see. Stay tuned for details on that, but definitely Thursday and Friday. So we'll see. That is them's the announcements. I said in the first hour, don't let garbage people derail you. I explained a little bit. That doesn't mean do evil, obviously. And don't do evil. But it's, you know, be wise. Like Jesus said, be wise as serpents, gentle as doves. Speaking of the subject matter at hand, multitasking is bad for radio, that's what. You almost have to, you know, if you really understand what's going on these days, you almost have to, if you're a Muslim person, you have to investigate mosques. If you're a Christian, you have to investigate churches and so on. Because obviously there are, you know, snitches everywhere. There are the informants that Trevor Aronson mentioned in his TED Talk. How this FBI strategy is actually creating U.S.-based terrorists. What? That just sounds crazy. It's Gladio B. And there's also, you know, the clergy response teams and that kind of stuff on the other side. We don't hear as much about that. But, you know, and PatCon is a real thing. So, you know, you have to investigate the mosque or the church. And, you know, how does that look? (Clears throat) you used to be able to, I mean, I remember a time not that long ago, you could buy and sell firearms around town. Wasn't a big deal. These days, you probably want to make sure that's an FFL transaction because, you know, the last thing you want is, you know, to sell something that gets used in some crazy plot and or vice versa. You know, you buy something and it's a Randy Weaver type situation. Aha, you didn't realize that that's an inch short. And so now you're in trouble. But I'll tell you what, we can make a deal. Let's make a deal. And if you're willing to be a rat, then, you know, we can make this all go away. But it never goes away because it's always the sword of Damocles, in a sense. It can never go away. And they will always, you know, do that. And I think there are some people, I think maybe, you know, Malcolm X is one of those people who basically said, not doing this anymore. You're not going to hold me hostage. So you have to be careful, but don't let the nonsense derail you. Live your life. And like I said, you know, the question is, who decides? Who's in charge? Who decides? And I believe it's a rhetorical question. The Lord God Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. That's a biblical deal. That's just my perspective on the matter. So, for what it's worth, I want to get back to this other stuff. Let me just read a little bit more of this excerpt. We'll finish the Philip Behaney thing and then we'll continue on. This is one side of the nonsense that's being fomented in our society. It's happening in our midst. Good, normal people, you know, for every person who says all Muslims are crazy, I say, you know, do a search on your favorite search engine, Muslims protect Christians. And there's the story, for example, of Muslims, you know, Boko Haram wants to pull people off the bus, and the Muslims are telling the Christians, here, take some of my clothing so you don't, you know, so you look like one of us. So, because they're, Boko Haram is separating people to get off the bus. Or, you know, the Muslims form a human chain around a Catholic church or something so that ISIS can't get in. It's not just that simple. So, don't allow yourself to be sucked into the nonsense and beguiled and radicalized. Live your life. Don't let garbage people, even the intellectuals, you know, don't let them infect your mind. And speaking of that, you know, Huckabee said it best in that CFR speech at the CSIS on the 2008 presidential campaign trail back in September of 2007. To create havoc in the world, you need educated people to provide it the intellectual underpinnings and poor, desperate people to provide the manpower. Before the Russian Revolution, the rural peasants who formed the overwhelming bulk of the population weren't sitting around reading Karl Marx. They were illiterate. It took a small number of intellectuals to provide the theory and then rally oppressed peasants behind them. The ruling class is the spark, but the underclass is the fuel. A strong middle class is the firewall. So that's how it works. Don't allow the intellectuals to infect your mind. Patrick Clausen says, if compromise is not coming with the Iranians, then the traditional way America gets to war is probably what would be best for U.S. interests. All right, Patrick, you first. Well, we'll see you on the front lines. Let us know how it's going. Anyway, back to this, the conversation explainer. What is Wahhabism in Saudi Arabia? Why, if Barack Obama wants us to not be at war with an entire religion, why did he never talk about the specifics? Then who exactly? What group specifically? So from this post, Saudi Arabia is the West's most important Arab and Islamic ally, but it is also a great embarrassment, flogging bloggers and beheading women being particular points of contention. Maybe Madonna and all of those crazy ladies should go to Saudi Arabia, and because, you know, you can do the stupid Bernaysian stunts, publicity stunts that they do here. I wonder how that would go over in Saudi Arabia. Just saying. Continuing, the general opinion is that the late king went some way toward modernizing and liberalizing Saudi society, but did nothing much about corruption and numerous other issues. Now, there is some concern about whether the new king will continue this agenda and how far he will be willing to go. And then the next section is titled Tense Times. Though it gives the appearance of monolithic control by the ruling elite, Saudi Arabia is in fact riven by profound tensions. These perpetually threaten to erupt and transform things forever. One such fault line centers on the nature and role of a Sunni sect and its connection to radical Islamism. Wahhabism is named after the 18th century Arabian theologian of the Hanbali school and is the strictest of the four Sunni Islamic juridical schools. It was originally the cornerstone of Saudi statehood. In 1744, Mohammed bin Saud, the founder of the current royal dynasty, made a pact with theologian Mohammed bin Abd al-Wahhab, in which the latter provided the crucial religious underpinning for the former's project to unify and centralize the warring tribes of Arabia, bringing them under his control. And basically, Wahhabism doesn't recognize anything else but itself. Nothing else, no other Sunni sects, obviously no Shiite. Wahhabism is Islam and nothing else is. Everything else is infidel. Saud and Wahhab's pact enabled the Saudis to establish their first state in Nejd, Central Arabia, in 1745. That state was twice defeated by Muhammad Ali Pasha of Egypt in 1818 and by the Saudi's Arabian tribal rivals in 1891. It reemerged within its present borders in 1932 with a little bit of British intrigue. Philby of Arabia and that kind of stuff. Central to the Saudis' military and political success was their renewed alliance with pro-Wahhabi nomadic militias called Ikhwan, literally Brotherhood. Wait a minute, that sounds familiar. Ever since, Wahhabi ideology has been central to the survival and legitimacy of the state of Al Saud. What is Wahhabism? Wahhabism is an Arabian form of Salafism, the movement within Islam aimed at its purification, quote-unquote, and the return to the Islam of the Prophet Muhammad and the three successive generations of followers. Its two major points of reference are the Quran and the Sunnah. The latter consists of hadiths, stories not included in the Quran. Sounds kind of like Talmudic Judaism, if I didn't know better. Describing how the Prophet and the four righteous caliphs dealt with issues in the public and private spheres. These, together with the Quran, form the basis of Sharia law. As in other forms of Salafism, Wahhabi Muslims call themselves Muwahidun, proponents of the oneness of God. They insist in every aspect of life on strict adherence to Sharia. They insist in every aspect of life on strict adherence to Sharia. From roughly the 1950s on, the Wahhabi ulama, Islamic scholars, were increasingly co-opted by the House of al-Saud to provide religious legitimacy as it tightened its grip on power against tribal rivals and consolidated Saudi Arabian nationalism as opposed to Nasserite pan-Arabism. The process of legitimization included Wahhabi policing of the Sharia-based legal system and education in schools and universities. A quarter of Saudi degrees are in Islamic theology. Wahhabism also dictated everyday moral behavior, including dress codes, segregation, and subordination of women. The severity of their rule of the rules helped establish the image of Saudi Arabia as the citadel of Islamic purity. Well, that's one way to look at it, I guess. This was reinforced by the existence of the Islamic sacred cities of Mecca and Medina on its territory. And then the section, the Saudi paradox. At the same time, Islamic social puritanism existed alongside the increasingly corrupt behavior of the ruling Sudairi clan, an extended royal family who number, according to some estimates, up to 20,000 people. This was made possible by the burgeoning oil trade with the West from the 1970s onward. And I feel like the clip should be played here. James Corbett's Big Oil. And that section where he says 5 months, as leaked documents from the 1973 Bilderberg meeting show, the oligarchs decided to use their control over the flow of oil to save the American hegemon, acknowledging that OPEC, quote, could completely disorganize and undermine the world monetary system, end quote. The Bilderberg attendees prepared for, quote, an energy crisis or an increase in energy costs, end quote, which they predicted could mean an oil price between $10 and $12, a staggering 400% increase from the current price of $3.01 per barrel. 5 months later, Bilderberg attendee and Rockefeller protege Henry Kissinger acted as Nixon's Secretary of State. Nixon's Secretary of State engineered the Yom Kippur War and provoked OPEC's response, an oil embargo of the U.S. and other nations that had supported Israel. On October 16, 1973, OPEC raised oil prices. I mean, do you see what's going on here? This is the hidden hand making all this fun stuff happen. On October 16, 1973, OPEC raised oil prices by 70%. At their December meeting, the Shah of Iran demanded and received a further price raise to $11.65 a barrel, or 400% of oil's pre-crisis price. When asked by Saudi King Faisal's personal emissary why he had demanded such a bold price increase, he replied, "Tell your king, if you want the answer to this question, he should go to Washington and ask Henry Kissinger." Isn't that interesting? But does the news tell us these things? No. Back to the explainer. The corruption engendered resentment toward the regime among some Saudi Salafis, neo-Wahhabis, particularly wealthy and educated younger people, including Osama bin Laden. A government decision to allow a large American military presence in the country in pursuit of the Gulf War in 1991 only aggravated the tension. Neo-Wahhabis remain by far the greatest potential threat to the regime. The advance of IS in Syria and Iraq, as well as its counterparts in Africa and elsewhere, presents a serious religious challenge to the Saudi regime and its Wahhabi establishment. Both IS and the Saudis claim to represent the true Islamic State, subscribing to strict adherence to Sharia law. Inventing two lies, getting you arguing heatedly over which one is true. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
So there is tension. There are nuances. I'll leave what I was reading at that and just say the nuances are what's important. And, you know, even PBS Frontline understands, you know, where all of this crazy ideological radicalism is coming from. The PBS Frontline playlist, Saudi Arabia, that includes the video that we've played several times inside the awkward U.S.-Saudi alliance against ISIS. This says it pretty much all in about 8 minutes. And again, Norm Dixon's article, September 18, 2001, a week after September 11, 2001. How the CIA created Osama bin Laden. And, you know, by November, PBS Frontline already had their Saudi time bomb series where they spelled it all out. And if we keep playing dumb, you know, then we can expect to be have our ignorance or our foolishness used against us, weaponized against us. So let's not pretend like we don't know what's going on here. The information is there if we will seek it out. That's one side of the conflict. There's the other side. And maybe we'll come back to that. Let's go to the phones and grab Chris in Virginia. Chris, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yes, sir. That's exactly what I did during COVID. Very first day was just live my life. And I noticed that no matter what the powers that be did, no matter how powerful they seemed to be over control over our individual lives, they couldn't stop God from changing the color of the leaves in the fall. They couldn't stop a stream or a river. They couldn't stop a cloud. They couldn't stop the wind. They couldn't stop the rain. They couldn't stop animals from behaving the way they normally do. And that's how I got some solace, a little bit of strength and hope was from that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I mean, really, they couldn't. You can do whatever you want, no matter how powerful or evil you are, but you cannot change that. You can't do it. It's inarguable. Just like mm-hmm. male and female. So that's where I got comfort. And yeah, I did live my life. I never wore a mask.
Mm-hmm.
I went into Home Depot stores up in Alexandria, Virginia, where there were 50 million people wearing a mask, and I was the only one not. You know, the funny part about it is nobody hardly ever said anything to me, even up there.
Yeah.
And I didn't take the vaccine. And now, anyway, but I wanted to say about the, I noticed that the Ferguson riots, remember the Ferguson riots in Ferguson, mm-hmm. Missouri?
Yeah.
That to me had all the hallmarks and earmarks of an Obama-controlled operation, a communist operation. And that was, to me, my theory is that was the first exercise before 2020. And I think Obama's running, he's got his hand on the joystick all day long. He's probably got a team. They got a war room. They're coordinating all this stuff from a war room. It's all coordinated. Right now, all this Palestinian riots, these are coordinated in the same way as all the 2020 riots were coordinated. Centrally controlled. They have some kind of secret communication. The FBI is not spying on them. Oh, no, they're going after J6ers. But the FBI isn't going to spy on them. They can have all the clandestine, evil communication to destroy everything all they want, and nobody's going to say a word because the FBI is captured, by the way, by Muslims, too. Anyway, I just wanted to say that.
Right on.
Throw that out.
Well,
do you agree with that?
I appreciate it. I think that what's going on is far above Obama's pay grade, and I think that the FBI was it's never been captured because it was always created as I don't know, it was captured when it was created, basically. And you know, we got all the propaganda at the turn of the 20th century that said, you know, we got all these bank robbers and outlaws and stuff. We need a national, we need a federal police force. And at first they didn't have guns. And then we heard about all of the crazy stuff that was going on in the early part of the 20th century. And then guess what? They got guns. And so I think it's always been a put-up job. I think it's
right
part of the...
Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Much appreciated. Stick around,
folks.
We'll be right back.
Yep.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Thank you. Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
One of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs. For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You know, I'm trying to explain this in simple terms. Radical Islam and radical Christianity, yeah, there is such a thing as Kinzinger's Christian Taliban. It's a real thing, and it's being fomented. And it has been incubating, just like radical Islam has been incubating for, let's say, at least a century in both cases. And that's an understatement. Let's see. I want to give you, what is that? I want to give you, Zudi Jasser explains it exceptionally well. There's a little 2-minute clip. Maybe we can play that first, and then I want to get back to Phil Haney. What you have to understand is there's a plan. What Zudi Jasser outlines is, oh my gosh, if you could orchestrate that, what a coup. And Philip B. Haney, we'll finish the clip of Philip B. Haney after we play this. What he said on Hannity is basically, you know, here are the specifics on the network that's been created. So you have to ask yourself, and it's so sinister. Zudi Jasser, Philip B. Haney, and what's his name? Chris Gobetz, for example. You know, these guys have talked about, like, the Haqqani network here, Darul Uloom, the Holy Land Foundation that finally got shut down. How many times did that thing get shut down over the last 20 years? And that's what Philip B. Haney is going to be talking about in the clip that we'll finish here in a second. And CARE, obviously, people say, what's wrong with CARE? It's a, you know, it's a philanthropic outreach. It's a, you know, well, you'll hear. And so what ends up happening is these are the organizations. These are essentially Wahhabi, Salafi, you know, radical outlets that train government agencies in sensitivity. They conduct the sensitivity training. And so basically you have the wolf masquerading among the flock, going around defining terms. And I would say the same thing happens, like I was saying, on the other side of the discussion when we talk about the term Jew, for example. Who's who in the zoo? I think that Paul told us in simple terms, you know, don't keep your eyes on the ground, look to heaven. But, you know, in simple terms, Romans 2 and Romans 9, you know, Christians are essentially messianic Jews. We're not legalistic, but, you know, we're messianic Jews, and we are grateful to be grafted in, being the wild branch grafted into the vine, which is Christ. And God says, you know, Paul reminds us, don't get it twisted. If he can graft in the wild branch, he can graft in the native branch too. So, you know, and Paul talks about that in Romans 11, verse 25, specifically, for example. Anyway, oversimplification is one of the worst, it's sort of the bane of our civilization these days. I want to give you this clip. Zudi Jasser explains brilliantly kind of the strategy at work. Let's play that, please. Yes, please. Zudi Jasser.
But if they criticize the king, it's like criticizing Islam. So in America, what better way for Muslim organizations to invoke blasphemy laws in America than to make you feel that any criticism of Islamic beliefs or doctrine ends up being bigotry against Muslims? That if you question the application of Sharia law inside a mosque, then you become a bigot against Muslims. Yes, real bigotry exists in America against Muslims. But we believe in the Muslim reform movement that the best way to fight that bigotry is for all of you to see us leading the fight for reform, to see us admit that we need a 12-step program to realize that violent extremism is a symptom. What does that mean? I don't even know what violent extremism is. It could be gang violence, drug violence, criminal activity, who knows? But if you say violent Islamism, or the battle against the ideas, the theocratic ideas that are the underbelly, then I think you begin to understand what we're fighting. And this is why we need Muslim reform. Because the largest agency in government right now, Homeland Security, which didn't exist before 9/11, now exists to billions of dollars, which are a waste of time of a whack-a-mole program, because all we are dealing with is the last step of radicalization. the entire previous steps that are nonviolent, we don't address. We simply address it about a tactic. And you're not fighting simply extremism or terrorism. Our foundation, the American Islamic Forum, was founded on the need to separate mosque and state. And when we formed it in 2003, people said, what are you doing? That doesn't make any sense. And then fast forward to 2011, Assad commits genocide against the Sunnis in Syria and slowly radicalizes the population even more than they were after 50 years of his tyranny and his father's tyranny. And you realize that the classic playbook of the Arab dictator is to create radicalized Muslims so that that becomes the foil to legitimize military dictatorship.
There you go.
And our Muslim reform movement right is there. About telling you and
he nailed it right there. And what if you're a British intrigue and you want to foment that and do it behind the scenes, you know, nudge it, let it happen, help it happen, make it happen on purpose and make it look like it was completely organic. That's what's been happening over the last, let's say, 100 years. Why is, you know, for example, I mean, I mentioned many times, Umar Aziz's article over at HuffPost, Wahhabism, Saudi Arabia, and their gift to Yale. Yale Law School guy, Umar Aziz. The first thing you need to know about Saudi Arabia is that it is not a country, but a financial and religious empire with a million poisonous tentacles stretching across both the West and the Muslim world. And so basically he writes and says, how come a Saudi billionaire donates $10 million to Yale University and Yale Law School to establish a center of Islamic law? Does that not seem strange, especially under the circumstances? But I talked about this when it happened. It wasn't so much Islamic studies as it was Wahhabi studies. And I said, we'll see when these kids go through the program. And sure enough, they sound like ISIS. They sound like Al-Qaeda. So why are we letting this happen? And from there, I would say, you know, there was the interview Candace Owens and Dinesh D'Souza talking about, you know, similar stuff. They were basically saying the Ivy League is the worst. It's like, you know, that video was titled The Candace Owens Show, Dinesh D'Souza. That was back on July 26, 2020. And so they were telling the story of the kids, Collinford Mattis and Aruj Rahman, you know, protesting Molotov cocktails and stuff. Basically, these kids who went through Ivy League education ruined their lives. Where is this coming from? That's a rhetorical question. And so you have to ask yourself, why are we allowing this? Who's allowing this? Because it's not some mystical, magical thing that we can't spot. This stuff comes from Saudi Arabia. And again, if you watch the video, Frontline, PBS Frontline, Inside the Awkward U.S.-Saudi Alliance Against ISIS, Confronting ISIS. Where does it come from? It comes from Saudi Arabia. It's Saudi textbooks and things, and there's that deal, that excerpt on the Salafi movement Wikipedia page that, you know, I have, you know, a frozen excerpt because the whole section got deleted after I talked about this a few times. The Salafi movement Wikipedia page used to have a section. I have this snapshot from April 22, 2019, 10:39 a.m. Views on extremism. It used to say on the Salafi movement Wikipedia page, Salafism is sponsored globally by Saudi Arabia, and this ideology is used to justify the violent acts of jihadi Salafi groups that include Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Boko Haram, and the Al-Shabaab, all of them, basically. In addition, Saudi Arabia prints textbooks for schools and universities to teach Salafism, as well as recruit international students from Egypt, Bangladesh, Indonesia, Africa, and the Balkans to help spread Salafism in their local communities. Some other Islamic groups, particularly some Sufis, have also complained about extremism among some Salafi. It has been noted that the Western association of Salafi ideology with violence stems from writings through the prism of security studies, quote unquote, that were published in the late 20th century and that continue to persist. Next section, regional groups and movements, Saudi Arabia, Wahhabism. Says Wahhabism is a more strict Saudi form of Salafism, according to Mark Dury, who states that Saudi leaders, quote, are active and diligent, end quote, using their considerable financial resources, quote, in funding and promoting Salafism all around the world. Ahmad Musali tends to agree with the view Wahhabism is a subset of Salafism, saying, as a rule, all Wahhabis are Salafists, but not all Salafists are Wahhabis. Anyway, there's more, but who talks about this? Who in America talks about this? You don't understand. Most of Americans don't understand. It's like a magic trick. It's Clark's third law. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. We don't understand the nuance and the terminology, so it's a big mystery. But once you dive in a little bit, and it doesn't take long, then you start to see it, and you see it's this one ideological bent, and somehow that ideological bent keeps finding money, keeps finding its way into influence in places like Yale Law School. Why? You know, what Dinesh and Candace talked about in 2020 is, I would say, a direct outgrowth of what Omar Aziz talked about in his article, Wahhabism, Saudi Arabia, and Their Gift to Yale. It's exactly what you should expect to happen. We're allowing this influence to radicalize our children. And if you don't agree with this, you know, if you don't agree with the way that, you know, we've been painting in generalities, then you must be crazy. It's incumbent upon us all to get knowledge up and to see the game that's afoot here. Kitson's counter gang is in full effect, and there is a concerted effort to, I can't remember how Zudi Jasser put it, but basically he also said, I think in the same talk actually, and that talk was titled, we need to finish the Philip Haney talk. That Zudi Jasser clip that we played was from his appearance at the World Council, the World Affairs Council in Orange County back in 2017. And it's titled Dr. Zudi Jasser Debates Impacts Salam al-Mariati on Reforming Islam at World Affairs Council. Been viewed a whopping 314 times. Posted by Democracy Broadcasting. Good job, guys. I forget how he said it in his I think Senate and even earlier congressional testimony, that basically what you do when you gaslight these other people who are involved, who you know, when you don't make the distinction, here is the radical group, here's everyone else. The radical group is a very small minority. And when you don't define terms and identify the radical group as separate and distinct from all the rest, then you alienate all of the non-radical Muslims. You know, you tick them off when you run around saying, well, you know, they're all bad, they're all trying to get us. No, that's not true. Like I said, do a search. Muslims protect Christians. Do a search in your favorite search engine. How does that happen? How do you explain that then? What is the advantage there? You have to define terms. You have to make the distinction between this Wahhabi, Salafi, Deobandi contingent and the rest. And if you don't, then you risk alienating and upsetting everyone else. Why why wouldn't they be upset? You keep talking about these people as if they're all of us. We would all feel that way, wouldn't we? All white people are, wait a minute. Hold on. Wouldn't we all feel that way? So it is incumbent upon us to discuss the specifics. Anyway, I want to finish Philip B. Haney's clip, his appearance on Hannity just before he testified. I think it was before the Senate Judiciary Committee. And some people say that 5 minutes or so may have been ultimately what got him, you know, suicided or whatever. No, Philip B. Haney didn't kill himself. Anyway, Philip B. Haney on Hannity. Can we play that, please? The rest of it?
Here with reaction, author of See Something, Say Nothing, a Homeland Security officer, exposes the government's submission to jihad. Former DHS employee Philip Haney. Philip, now you started working for DHS in what, 2003, correct?
Yes, I was a founding member of DHS.
And part of your job is you were looking for terror ties. For example, you would identify people with terror links. In the early 2000s, you were profiling people with links to all of these terror groups. That was your job, right?
Yes, we were connecting the dots. We were focusing on individuals and organizations, networks across both United States and with affiliations in foreign countries.
Then 6 years into your tenure in 2009, you were ordered to scrub the records of Muslims with these terror ties by our government. That's, who told you to do that?
I was directed from DHS headquarters. It's important to keep in mind that that was 1 year after the November 2008 Holy Land Foundation trial, the largest terror trial in American history, that irrefutably proved that these individuals from the Muslim Brotherhood front groups were in direct financial support of Hamas.
And that's the trial where CAIR was named as an unindicted co-conspirator, if I'm not mistaken.
As along with Islamic Society of North America and the North American Islamic Trust, three major groups.
Okay, so you were doing your job identifying individuals. You built up a computer database. Obama becomes president. You are literally ordered to scrub the names of Muslims with terror ties that you had worked so hard to find. You believe you could have stopped what happened in Orlando and San Bernardino had you not been ordered by Obama's DHS to do this. Is that true?
Well, that was the first, what I call the first great purge. That was in 2009 with more than 800 records. The case that I'm referring to about stopping the San Bernardino and now related to the Orlando was 3 years later in 2012. It was a larger case called the Tablighi Jamaat Initiative, and it was another network separate from but related to in some ways the Muslim Brotherhood network that we just talked about.
So in the case of San Bernardino, it was Saeed Farouk and his wife. You had identified that mosque as a place where you believe we should have been paying attention to, correct?
There's an entire network of those kind of mosques across the United States. And I found out a couple of days ago that the mosque in Fort Pierce is also related to the same network.
Let me ask you bluntly, could San Bernardino, but you were doing this great work, and I applaud you for what you have done. You were told to scrub, literally, the records of Muslims with terror ties. You had to do your job or you'd be fired. Do you believe in your heart that the information you had gathered, if you had kept that information, you might have been able to prevent the terrorist attacks in both San Bernardino and Orlando?
Well, to clarify, I wasn't told to scrub. My agency deleted them themselves. But yes, I believe I have a plausible premise that we could have stopped it by two major ways. Either Syed Farouk would have been put on the no-fly list and not allowed to travel, or his pending fiancé would have been denied a visa because of his affiliation with an organization with plausible ties to terrorism. That's at least two different ways.
Can I repeat this one other way? You did your job, and other people did their jobs, and in comes the Obama administration, and they wipe out all the work that could have potentially saved the lives of Americans. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, it's a fair statement. My records were tagged, and I got an email from all 67 of them when they were deleted, and they came back to my inbox exactly the moment when they were entirely deleted from the system.
Oh, my God. This is unconscionable. Phil Haney, thank you for telling the truth and speaking out. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
It shocks the conscience.
So it's important to understand. See, there's an architecture that, you know, the presumption, the implied, it's not stated, is the way that our so-called government institutions operate is as advertised, so to speak, like the FBI, for example. But and, you know, saying Obama in this case is a limited hangout. I mean, that's just a distraction. It's misdirection. The Obama administration comes in, has nothing to do with Obama. They were just who was in office at the time. What this is really all about is if Philip B. Haney's work would have been allowed to continue, it would have been, I think, a short trip to see, you know, you put Philip B. Haney together with Trevor Aronson and you see, and that's just the start. That's the tip of the iceberg. All of a sudden you realize we have intelligence agencies that are coordinating strategy of tension episodes and trying to foment what Zudy Jasser talked about in that clip that we played. For what purpose? Well, if you want to create a dictatorship, what did he say? The classic playbook of the Arab dictator is to create radicalized Muslims so that becomes the foil to legitimize military dictatorship. Now, let's just riddle me this, Batman. What has happened in America since September 11, 2001? Has the national security apparatus been ratcheted up? That's interesting, isn't it? Without exception, hasn't it? It's almost like somebody somewhere was planning to do that, you know, and for that matter, we should probably insert Aaron Russo here. Remember him? That guy that we've all forgotten, talking about Nick Rockefeller saying there are going to be people looking for a guy in caves. We could insert Aaron Russo saying that, and Bill Cooper, June 28, 2001, saying they're going to try to blame something on this guy. Don't you believe it? But you know what? It's all just coincidences, right? Wink, wink. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. Have a great weekend. Pray for one another. Support the network. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hello, hello, hello from beautiful Colorado. My name is Samuel Jung Kay, and I am currently the lead Shilajit hunter and master herbalist for Colorado Shilajit Company. In this video series, I will be discussing what we believe is the greatest of all adaptogenic superfoods and the single greatest natural healing remedy gifted to us by Mother Earth. I think you too will become as excited by this incredible substance called Shilajit as we were and are after our discovery of this amazing gift right here in beautiful, colorful Colorado. You may already know Shilajit by other names: Shilajit, Momio, Momi, Mami, Mineral Pitch, Asphaltum, and others. Shilajit literally translates to destroyer of weakness and conqueror of mountains. Shilajit has been in use for thousands of years and is considered as the highest valued cure-all of any earthly substance.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.